Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who loves to watch true crime, but only if it's shoplifting, Pete Chwaba.
We have got true crime on the show tonight. In force. Hey, Wisconsin, how are you? Great to have you with me on this Tuesday night. I hope it's beautiful wherever you are. And beautiful doesn't necessarily mean sunny. It just means you have a great attitude about whatever weather you're facing right now, because it's all beautiful. Except a tornado, a hurricane, or a tsunami. Conrad, you ever been caught in a tsunami?
I can't say I have.
You're lucky.
I mean... I live in Wisconsin, I don't think I'll be caught one of those.
It could happen. The Bay could, like, you know, you never know what could happen. The weather's been so crazy the last few years. I wouldn't even rule that out. But I hope it doesn't happen. We have a great show tonight. I'm very excited to be back on the home court here in Green Bay. Looking opposite the glass, one Conrad Krieger, the young buck, producing the show tonight. How are you? Did you miss me yesterday?
Yeah, it felt weird. You know, I was putting like hand signals up and you weren't there. So I was...
I saw you on the street. I had two sets. I had Chris Casper, who was a lifesaver, by the way. He came through for us yesterday with our musical guest in studio. That was great. But I had Chris giving me 2 minutes, you giving me 2 minutes. And luckily you guys were mostly in sync, so it worked out. But that was fun being in Madison. Always fun to be in Madison overlooking State Street there at the Civic Media headquarters. But it's great to be back in Green Bay, downtown Green Bay. What is going on here tonight? What is the parking drama tonight in downtown Green Bay? Can you tell me?
I mean, actually, I got to the studio and I got a parking spot right out front, so.
Well, at least you're not gloating. it just seems like, and you know what happened? I was kind of in a hurry to get here because I ended up staying in Madison longer than I thought I was going to have to. My Maps app on my iPhone took me like way out of the way. So, yeah, it's like AI is being kind of a jerk, right?
It didn't want you to get here.
It didn't want me to get like, I'm like looking at City Deck Landing where I'm driving. I'm like, wait a minute. How am I coming at it from that angle when I was coming from the south? It was just very strange. But made it here. All is good. Bob Dennis is here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. He is the he's a mob expert, mob and mafia expert. He hosts a podcast. Conrad, I don't have my questions in front of me. Damn it, where are my questions? What is the name of Bob's podcast? We got to get this right. Mob and Mafia News.
Yep.
And he will be joining me at 7:35. We are going to talk. This is one of my favorite subjects to talk about. I am so excited. There is a guy in Green Bay who is, really knowledgeable about this stuff because he can be in studio here. And I've got a lot of questions for Bob. I love that he's in Green Bay, but as far as I know, there's not a huge mob contingency in Green Bay, or at least there wasn't. But if there was, they must be really good and practice omerta, because I was unaware of this. But we'll talk to Bob, and we'll focus on the Chicago and Milwaukee mob. They're very intertwined. That'll be fun. That's coming up at 7:35. Author Linda Drews is here at 8:20 tonight, and we're going to talk with Linda about the books she's written, that a lot of them are set in Wisconsin and they're mysteries. One is set in Door County. Fascinating stuff. And I don't know what it is. This is like the third mystery writer we've had on Nightlight that writes books and mysteries set in Door County. And I think that's really cool, because I think Door County, as beautiful as it is, lends itself to that kind of storytelling. So we'll talk to Linda at 8:20 about her work. Lots of other stuff going on. We have Woody Harrelson's birthday is today. That is correct, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He's 63. He is a vegan and a former weed enthusiast. And I remember Woody on Bill Maher's show about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, where Bill Maher held up a photo of Woody when he was smoking weed and he was laughing hysterically and had this big smile on his face. And then he said, "And here's you now." It was this very sullen photo of Woody Harrelson, Bill Maher making the joke, obviously, that he thinks Harrelson was a more fun person when he was on weed. But Woody Harrelson has been kind of a trailblazer in all of this kind of, like, I think the term vegan, I had never even heard of prior to like 30 years ago when I heard that Woody Harrelson was practicing veganism. So really interesting guy and a really good actor. Like you think he would be typecast because he's got that kind of, his delivery is a little offbeat and he's got kind of a very memorable face, but he has carved out a great acting legacy. And I love guys or girls that come onto the scene through a sitcom and then they just blossom when they leave and they're doing, he's doing like Zombieland and No Country for Old Men and Kingpin. Like his resume is incredible. So in honor of Woody Harrelson, tonight's question, what is your favorite Woody Harrelson acting role? What is your favorite Woody Harrelson TV show or film? Pretty simple. And we can't really ask that question with too many actors because, or actresses, because they don't have a body of work where people like, I'm sure I'm forgetting 20 Woody Harrelson films right now. He's done that many films. So I feel confident that we're spreading the love here regarding his resume. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. What is your favorite Woody Harrelson movie or TV show? Tonight's question. And what was our question last night? I've already forgotten. And it was like a big hit.
It was about Wisconsin actors.
Willem Dafoe, right. Okay.
Yes.
So we still have that clip I didn't get to last night. And I thought that was really cool, him being interviewed when about acting and the roles he chooses. Keep that handy, my friend. Let's have that ready to roll in case we want to bring that out. But if you have not downloaded the Civic Media app, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot stress enough how great it is, how easy it is to use. Nightlight is on statewide, so you can click on any one of the stations, as long as there's not a Brewer game. And just, there's a text icon right there. It's that simple. Love to hear from you throughout the show, regardless of what we're talking about. It's just great to be with you guys tonight. And hopefully you will get some insights from tonight's show, maybe a few laughs, and we'll see what happens. It's that kind of night. It's willy-nilly here at Nightlight tonight. I'm going to start, if I may, with greeting cards. Conrad, you ever buy greeting cards?
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Who do you, like, mom for Mother's Day, birthday?
Yeah,
let me ask you a question. Do you ever read the Hallmark contrived message in the card, or you just look at the card? Do you read the greeting?
You know, sometimes if it's just a funny front card, I'm like, oh, that's good enough.
Yeah, right.
But if it needs to be sentimental, I'll look into it, see what's inside, yeah.
So you look inside to see what the card says instead of writing your own little epitaph.
Yeah.
Okay. That's,
well, if it needs to be sentimental, I'll write my own thing.
Sure.
But if it's just like a funny like birthday thing, find a funny card.
That's kind of how I am.
Yeah.
If it's quick and there's a goofy rabbit face and you say, I'll jump in a hole for you, whatever it is, I get that. My wife's family, they all read the cards. And they'll pass if they don't like what's written by Hallmark or whatever the greeting card company is. They will move on and look for a card with a message. I don't think I've ever done that.
Even if it needs to be like sentimental?
No.
Really?
I get a sense of the card by looking at the cover of the card. I don't rely on Hallmark to tell me how I feel about my dad or my brother or my wife. I'm going to write that myself. Because I find them very cheesy.
Yeah, I feel like it is cheesy a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, and whatever. It's fine. It's the thought that counts. It truly is. But I don't do that. And I'm curious if people do that. So you're welcome to text us. Let us know. Do you read what's inside the greeting card? My wife's family will take it a step further. And they will write, like, if I was writing, let's say it was Conrad's first communion. I would say, Conrad, comma. Then I would rely on the Hallmark message, and then I would put, love, Pete, or sincerely, Pete. Like, and I feel like...
The bare minimum right
well,
there.
Yeah, and it's not like it's plagiarism. I know they didn't write that, but they're kind of taking credit. Pete, here's how I feel. Love, your wife. I think it's very sweet, first of all, that they put the time in. I can't really... Because I know I'm a jaded kind of writer, but some of these messages are just terrible. On this day, my son, I look at you, like, I can't do it. I start laughing. So We'll have to find some cheesy greeting cards. Maybe we can read those. Anyway, I'm curious as to whether or not people do that or if they just write their own. You had a nice little hybrid answer, though. It's like kind of sometimes you do this. And I get that.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Another question is, where do you buy it at?
I'll tell you where you buy it at, the dollar store. Have you seen the price of cards lately? I think I bought the book Jaws for cheaper than a greeting card.
I feel like if you buy it at a grocery store right now, it's going to be higher than some of the groceries you buy.
It is. It's like it's like $6.99 for a greeting card that I don't even like.
I agree with the dollar store.
I agree. And what you find in a dollar store greeting card, it can be just as horribly written or well written as what you're going to find in some big card company, American Greetings or Hallmark or whatever it is. I think Hallmark likes to do that because they make movies out of the messages and the greeting cards. So there you go. You can chime in on the greeting card conversation. Let us know your favorite Woody Harrelson movie. Either way, some cool stuff happened recently. Dave Chappelle and Jon Stewart got together and did a show at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. I mean, you talk about, and it was kind of hush-hush. It was sort of a covert show at the famous Apollo Theater. And they talked about Biden and Trump, and this is before Biden dropped out, and Gaza and the men of Ohio, I assume, in reference to J.D. Vance. And no phones were allowed. No cell phones were allowed in the crowd. So I find that interesting, and I wonder if they're going to put it out as a special. Some other cool stuff. Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen dropped today in 1985. Almost 40 years. I cannot believe it has been 40 years since that album hit the charts and just catapulted Springsteen into an entirely different level of show business. Pretty incredible. All right. What's your favorite Woody Harrelson film? Let us know how you feel about greeting cards. When we come back, I have a really weird bit of information about John Wayne and a really funny clip about Woody Harrelson. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got two votes already for Hunger Games. Stacy Sue on the stream says Hunger Games after she said hi, Pete and Conrad. Hello, Stacy Sue. Hunger Games was a great one. That's another film of his. I forgot he even did. And then in the text line, we also have, I'll let you read that one, Conrad.
Wait. Hunger Games.
Text line. Yeah, Hunger Games. For your mom. Your mom said Woody was great in the Hunger Games. We've got two votes already for Hunger Games. Conrad's mom is one of them. One of our best texters. And Stacy Sue say Hunger Games.
Yeah.
So those are both great. Anna from the 608 says, hi, Pete and Conrad. My favorite Woody Harrelson role was on Cheers. I want to say that too, Anna. He's just got such a great, when I like him in a movie, I love him. Like, I loved him in True Detective. I loved him in No Country for Old Men. I loved him in Kingpin. He's just one of those guys who can take a smaller role, and it's not going to affect Hollywood's choice to cast him in a lead role. There aren't a ton of actors like that. Willem Dafoe, interestingly enough, who we were talking about last night, can do that too. Can do a really cool cameo or a minor role and won't be looked at as an ensemble actor because he's who he is. He's built a resume where he gets the respect he deserves as an actor, not just a movie star or a leading man. But I would agree, Anna, that was my first introduction to Woody Harrelson. I thought he was so funny because I loved Coach on Cheers. I'm like, how are they going to replace Coach? And they did it with a younger version of Coach, and he was hilarious. Cam from Nina, 651. Cam from Nina sent a picture of a dog who looks really nervous, and I assume that's in reference to our greeting card question. See, now, if I saw that, it would get my eye, and I would probably just buy it. I wouldn't read the inside of it. Because frankly, the picture sells it, right? That's a really weird.
For a birthday, for anniversary, whatever, yeah, right. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
But here is one of my favorite Woody Harrelson roles, and it was from No Country for Old Men. He plays a bounty hunter who is looking for Josh Brolin, who crosses paths with Anton Chigurh, played by Javier Bardem. Javier Bardem, through the whole scene, he's tracked Woody Harrelson, and he thinks Woody Harrelson knows where the money in the briefcase is. And he is holding this incredibly high-powered gun on Woody Harrelson while they sit in Woody Harrelson's hotel room.
I'm a day trader. I could just go home.
You could.
Make it worth your while. Take you to an ATM. There's 14 grand in it. Everybody just walks away.
An ATM?
I know where the satchel is.
If you knew, you would have it with you.
I could find it from the riverbank. I know where it is.
I know something better.
What's that?
I know what it's going to be.
Where's that?
It will be brought to me and placed at my feet.
You don't know to a certainty. 20 minutes, it could be here.
I do know to a certainty. And you know what's going to happen now, Carson. You should admit your situation. There will be more dignity in it.
You go to hell.
All right. Let me ask you something. If the rule you followed, Bridget of this, of what use was the rule?
Do you have any idea how crazy you are?
You mean the nature of this conversation?
I mean the nature of you. You could have the money, Anton.
All right, so the ring happens about three more times, and then you just hear this huge gunshot. And he just wastes Woody Harrelson while he's sitting in a chair in his hotel room. And the great thing about the Coen brothers, they use blood as directors better than anybody I've ever seen. Chigurh, played by Javier Bardem, brilliantly answers the phone and puts his feet up on the bed just before the blood is about to hit his socks. So the trail of blood from the massacre he just created with Woody Harrelson. Just a great scene and so much tension because you know Woody's dead in that scene. And he tries to kind of weasel his way out of it. But just a phenomenal scene from one of my favorite movies. Let's try to get another Woody clip, Conrad. We've got Cheers, right? And True Detective.
Yeah, and we also got a Kingpin clip.
And a Kingpin. Okay, so how do we, against the clock here, what makes the most sense?
The True Detective. This is with the cutting the lawn.
Right. Okay, let's, how long is Cheers? Do we have time for Cheers?
That one's a little longer. We'll have to play that a little bit later.
Okay, what about Kingpin?
Yeah, we can do that one too.
Trying to get some comedy in here. And I wanted to make Anna happy, but Sherry joins us tonight too and says, hi, Conrad and Pete. Hi, Sherry. Great to have you with us. We'd love to hear your favorite Woody Harrelson movie. All right, let's do Kingpin. This is Woody Harrelson and Kingpin.
This is when they're trying to hustle for money for when they're bowling.
Okay.
And they totally mess it up.
So, you two dictionary salesmen.
You would be punctilious in assuming that.
Hey, your buddy tells me you're the best salesman in the whole company. You must be a pretty smooth talker.
Yeah. Hey, you don't have to read them to sell them, you know. So, Steve, what do you say we bowl a couple games? Steve? Yo, Steve Arino.
Oh, right. Okay, you want to bowl for some big money, hey? But I'll lose my entire bonus check because I'm so bombed.
You get that way when you drink ginger ale? I haven't heard this one in a while. How does the rest of this hustle work?
Nice going, De Niro.
It's Steve. What, you want to ball the whole thing?
Look, if you guys want a straight-up money game, you show up at this address tonight at midnight and bring some money.
Great movie. Very underrated. When you hear the Farrelly brothers, you don't hear, you hear Dumb and Dumber, you hear Something About Mary, and those are two phenomenal movies, crushed at the box office. But Kingpin is one of my favorite Farrelly brothers movies. Just a great film and very underrated. So Stacy Sue also checks in. She says, I'm in Madison. Hi from UW. Stacy, we were there last night. Nightlight was in Madison last night. We just missed you. She says she's with her senior. Maybe thinking about going to UW. Good luck with that decision. That's a big one. You could not do better than UW-Madison, though. Guys, a few more texts here. Tom from New Berlin. The best thing is Woody was never typecast from Cheers. That's a great point, Tom. Yeah, he. We should look up what he did right after Cheers, because maybe that's what kind of set him on a different path. But whatever it was, he made great choices. Ronnie from Horicon says, since you mentioned Bruce Springsteen, talk about the time he played the Uptown Theater. I assume that's the Uptown in Chicago. And there was a bomb threat in 1975. Did not. I might have read about that years ago, Ronnie, but I don't remember that. Share knowledge if you have some, please. Would love to hear that. Tom says, acting at its best, talking about Harrelson. Steve from Florida. I think Woody did a great job in True Detective and Kingpin, but my all-time favorite is Woody playing Woody in Cheers. Not many people would argue with that, Steve. All right, coming up next on Nightlight, Bob Dennis is here to talk about the Chicago mob and the Milwaukee mob and all things mob. This is Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Peach Wabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who still likes to build a fort, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. So we've got Linda Drews coming up at 8:20 to talk about her novels and her mystery writing. She lives in Door County, and she will also join us in studio. Conroy, we have two in-studio guests tonight. How crazy is that?
That's awesome.
I love it. And we are going to turn our attention now to one of my favorite topics, and it's not because I was in the mob. I did audition once. They didn't take me. Whatever. That's fine. No hard feelings. But I do have a real interest in the mafia. And Chicago had a big mafia. At one point, it was, I read it was the biggest criminal entity in the world, because in New York, it was broken up into five families. Chicago was all just the outfit. But here to set me straight or confirm my opinions is a real expert. Bob Dennis joins me right now in studio. He is the host of the Mob and Mafia News podcast. And it is great to have you here, Bob. Welcome.
Thank you. It's fun to be here tonight.
Yeah. So let's start. You know, I don't even know how I got started with my interest. I probably saw The Godfather or something maybe, but where I grew up, at least the first part of my childhood, Chicago had a very big mob scene, and I heard about it somewhere and started reading about it. What got you interest?
Relatives.
Relatives.
Yes.
Okay.
I grew up in the Minneapolis area, and I had a grandfather who ran liquor for Al Capone, believe it or not. Because Capone had a large presence in Wisconsin, believe it or not. Specifically, he had manufacturing sites in Somerset, Wisconsin, and he used them to run to the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. St. Paul was a safe city. Anything could go on there, and as long as you didn't break the rules within the mob, you were safe. Huh. And so one of the things he did was he drove liquor back and forth.
Interesting. So you got started. What age were you about when that happened? When you realized,
probably about 10.
Okay. And you knew what your grandfather was doing then?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he ever put you to work?
Oh, no. I mean, he did this back in from like about 1919 until about 1931 when Capone was put away in prison.
Yeah.
So, wow. It's pretty amazing. The only problem he had is he kind of liked the product too much. So they converted him from being a driver to being a mechanic, which was good because he had this excellent ability and he was able to get higher horsepower out of the vehicles that they drove, which were Hudson automobiles, which were capable of carrying over 1,000 pounds worth of alcohol at any given time, which is at nine pounds a gallon, you know, is quite a bit.
So how did you learn? Like, did you sit down with your grandfather one time and just say, tell me everything you know? Did he have letters? How did you kind of learn more about what he did? That sounds like some pretty inside baseball stuff you just said there.
Well, it mostly from family members. Okay. I only recently found out that he actually had a still in the attic of his house. That I didn't know. My brother actually told me that. But partly from what was told, and other family members were involved as well. He had a brother who was a fence.
Wow.
You know, which is, if you don't know what a fence is, it's somebody who sells stolen products to other people.
Right.
And I actually have a cousin who is my age. I won't say a name or anything, but he actually got in trouble because of that and did some prison time. So
interesting.
It,
I think people, you know, it seems sometime any person associated with the mob that gets in trouble is considered a gangster, or, but they're not necessarily, you know what I mean? Like they're not in the mob or made guys or whatever, but there's so much peripheral activity. And it's a pecking order or a hierarchy, isn't it?
Yes. There are a lot of associates, people who are just, you know, on the fringes of everything. And they might be, at the lowest level, they would be a fence. But then you would work your way up from being either an associate to being a soldier. And then from being a soldier, you might move up to being a captain. And from the captain, ultimately the job would be boss. They aren't always referred to as a godfather. They are more often than not a boss. The movie is great, but it shows really basically one system.
The movie meaning?
The Godfather.
The Godfather, okay.
Is there any other movie?
There are some good ones, yeah. I'll be honest. I think there could be a lot more mob movies.
They could be a lot more. As a matter of fact, today I did a podcast about one that was an Italian movie made back in 2008. And now, of course, I'm not going to be able to think of it, but how it was one of the most dramatic movies about the mafia. It was made in Italy, and how the man who wrote it was actually under protection for 9 years because so much of what he had written was so close to the truth.
Oh, wow.
And it's available on Paramount. I'd have to look up the name of it, but I don't recall it off the top of my head.
We could find that. Yeah, we could find that out.
But
before we let you go.
Before I forget,
and
this is just kind of related. Today, it was actually on this date in July the 23rd of 1934, that John Dillinger was killed in Chicago.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Guess how old he was.
I know he was young, but 34?
31.
31.
Okay. A lot of these guys did not get very old.
No, they didn't. And Capone, when he went to Chicago, was like still in his 20s, maybe?
26 when he actually took over.
Wow.
He was born in 1899, and he moved to Chicago in 1919 at the behest of Johnny Torrio.
Right.
And he had also moved because he had gotten in trouble, and he was married and had one son. His name was Albert, who went by the name of Sonny. And he moved to Chicago to get away from the fact that they were going to try and find him. He had beaten up a guy in the Irish mob on a request by the Italian mob. And the Irish people were not happy about it, the Irish mob, and they wanted Capone, and he needed to get out. And Torrio was a friend of his he had worked with in New York. And they said, yeah, come on out to Chicago. It's big. There's a lot of room for you.
So wow.
That's how he got there.
That's interesting. Capone, let me ask you this. Capone, like I mentioned before I introduced you, what I've read from different sources is that Chicago was just the biggest. Everything was under one roof, and they owned other cities going west, eventually Milwaukee, Cleveland. Does Chicago happen from a mob standpoint if Capone never goes there? I know there was Big Jim Colosimo, who kind of started.
He started the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I think it was on its way, and it was a big enough city where it was going to be a player. But was it Capone that took it to another level, or would they have gotten there anyway?
It kept growing. It started with Big Jim Colosimo, who had he did primarily gambling and prostitution. He did not do alcohol.
Okay.
And his wife's nephew was Johnny Torrio.
Oh, right. Okay.
And Johnny Torrio kept saying, we really need to get into this booze business because there's a lot of money in this. And Colosimo said, no, I don't want to do it. And so Torrio decided, you know, we got to take him out. And sent for his old friend, Frank Yale from New York.
Frank Yale,
came out and put the hit on him. And then Johnny Torrio moved up. And of course, then Capone moved up as well. He had started out as a bartender at the Four Deuces for in Chicago for Torrio. And when the hit was done on Colosimo, they needed to have somebody as a bodyguard for Torrio. So they brought in Al Capone because he was tough in the sense that he would just beat the living daylights out of anybody at any given time.
Right.
So that's how he kind of got into it. So Torrio advanced it, and he eventually, because he got into trouble for some of the things that he did, he killed off Dean Banyan, the Irish mob's head man. Right,
the North Side Gang. Yeah.
Yes, and a lot of people were looking for him, part of the reason why he needed Al Capone. And in 1925, 1926, he said, you know what? He got shot like four or five times.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't think I want to do this anymore. And he handed it over to Al Capone. And Al Capone was an incredible logistic guy. He could look at something and figure out how to do something. He also came up with ingenious methods of outwitting the government. Back then, he dealt a lot in beer, obviously. And you could make near beer back then, which was one half of 1% alcohol. And what happened is he took over what was then an abandoned brewery because they had 1,700 people who were unemployed and said, okay, everybody has a job. They went back to creating near beer with this half of 1% of alcohol and put it in the big kegs and they would ship it. The government would check on these to make sure that they had, you know, they weren't breaking the alcohol levels.
Right.
But what he did is he came up with this idea that they would take veterinary syringes, like you would give shots to animals for if they were sick, and they would fill it with 180 proof alcohol. Once the barrels were in the speakeasies, he would have his people go in and take these syringes and inject them into, you know, the plug that goes in there is called a bung. And they would put the needle through the bung hole. It was cork. And they would insert and put the alcohol in there, that 180 proof, which then made the alcohol, you know, beer.
Really?
But because it was on site at that time, it had already been inspected, and the government thought, well, this stuff is legit.
If nothing else, tonight on Nightlight, I've learned where the term bunghole comes from. So I've got that going for me. All right, so here's another story I heard that I found fascinating. The Irish mob from the north side and the Southside Italians with Capone and Torrio had a big shootout. And this was probably the shootout that got Torrio injured to the point where he didn't want to do this anymore. And supposedly Bugs Moran, who was Dean O'Banion's, I think, main guy maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read this stuff in a while, but had Capone in his sights and injured and pointed his gun at him and was out of bullets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another pivot in history that might never have happened. Capone could have easily died there, and the Irish mob would have been the mob. Probably, maybe the Italians never would have grown it to what it became, right?
Right. It's and it was because of that Capone got even more paranoid about being safe. He actually had an automobile that was completely armored so that you couldn't get to him in his car. His chairs all had bulletproof backs on them. He at first went from hotel to hotel, never stayed anywhere two nights in a row.
Right.
But then eventually bought I believe it's the Lexington in Chicago.
Yeah.
And took over the fourth and fifth floors and created secret passageways, dropped trap doors in floors, and things that ways for him to get out in case something happened because he was so paranoid about getting shot because he had been shot at many times and gotten away with not getting hurt.
Right. It's interesting. I live in the Marinette area now, and there was a hotel there called the Hotel Marinette, and there are pictures of Capone's, maybe that car, but his bodyguards out in front of the Hotel Marinette. I don't know why he was there. I know he had a lot of stuff going on in the North Woods and his big palace there that was kind of armed to the teeth as well. But he has a lot of, I know my friend growing up said his grandpa cut Al Capone's hair. Like, there's all these people with these crazy connections to Al Capone throughout Wisconsin.
It's amazing. Well, because they made the run from Milwaukee to, Green Bay and up to Marinette Menominee, his brother actually...
Frank?
No, Frank was killed during the election.
His brother owned the bar, right?
Yes, up there. Billy's Bar up in in Mercer.
Right.
But he lived in Hurley for a while as well, the brother, whose name, again, I can't think of. I got notes, and I can probably find it. But yes, he had a lot of connections to Wisconsin. And Green Bay had connections to Milwaukee with the mafia. I guess I can say their name, back in the day, the Provimi veal people provided veal for one of the mafia restaurants in Milwaukee. It was known as the best place to get, you know, food. It's like the line in The Godfather where he says, you try the veal, it's the best in town, you know?
Right.
And same kind of deal.
It's funny. when you say that, I loved going out to eat when I lived in Chicago, probably from like 85 to 95 and or 96. And I loved going into restaurants. I could always tell when they were mob owned because they took good care of you.
Yeah.
They came up. If something wasn't perfect, it was comped. Now, I don't know if it's still like that. I've heard different stories about different places, but I will say they knew how to run a restaurant. And, you know, I never felt like I was going to get whacked because I'm not in the mob when I ate there. So,
well, there's the old saying, especially about Capone, and it was that those people who were his friends who would take care of you. And if you were somebody who wasn't, he'd take care of you.
He'd take care of you. So is it hard gathering all this information in Green Bay, or does the web just, is that where you do all your research these days?
All research comes from the web. Yeah. There's my current Mob and Mafia news podcast. I do everything contemporary Mob and Mafia because I thought there'd be some opening in that area as opposed to historical.
Okay.
So
that's great. When we come back, I want to ask you about Tony Accardo.
Excellent.
To me, he is one of the most fascinating mob figures ever. And we'll talk a little Sam Giancana, then we'll maybe move up I-94 a little bit to Milwaukee. So Bob Dennis is here. We're having some mob talk. And I get to name drop about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, too. I'll do that next. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It will soon be your tomorrow. I don't ask for much. I only want trust. And you know it don't come easy. And this cup of mine keeps growing all the time. And you know it just ain't easy. Open up your heart. Let's come together. Use a little.
Talking mob and mafia and the syndicate and the outfit. This is a fun topic for me here on Nightlight. Bob Dennis is here. Local guy, Bob Dennis, who grew up in the Minneapolis area, whose grandfather ran the mob there?
No. A long ways from it.
I'm just kidding. You can't even joke about that stuff. I probably shouldn't even joke about that.
I will tell you one secret. Yeah. One of the reasons why you couldn't find my podcast initially is because I used to do it under an alias.
Okay, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, that's because if you looked at it the first time, it would not have had my own name under there. And it was because a friend of mine said that I shouldn't use my real name. So I thought about it. And we also did kind of a hokey sounding delivery on it, because if you listen to the early ones, there's about 150 episodes on there.
Nice.
And if you listen to it, I go, Mob and Mafia News, Archer Davis reporting. You know,
I love it.
And I had people tell me they made them think they were in the 1930s, which was fine. But, you know, I mean, after a while.
Yeah. For those listening, how can they find your podcast now?
You could easily go on TikTok and find it and just look under Mob and Mafia News.
Mob and Mafia News. You don't have to use your name or anything.
No, there is actually a link there that you could go directly to. It's on a host. It's on what's called Swellcast. And I like that because people had immediate feedback. They would be able to respond to you when you had a program.
Oh, nice.
And it was free also. And because I'm a former radio guy, it was cheap. And I thought, okay, that's my way.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it. They're good people. So
well done. Yeah, I liked some of the music you had on. But this is when I thought maybe I had stumbled onto the wrong podcast, but it sounds like it was yours. But you have it really complements the material. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's stuff you composed yourself or had a friend do, or it was just licensed, but it was great.
If I was that talented, I would not be in Green Bay. I would be someplace making a lot of money. Speaking of talent, before I forget, I would like to do a shout out to a mutual friend of ours.
Mike Desitel.
Mike Desitel. Yes. He's been a little under the weather lately, but he seems to be coming back and doing well. And
I'm glad you
news
said that,
reporter exceptional.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I was in such a hurry to get here today. It's been a bit of a scramble, but I'm glad we gave Mike a shout out because he's known actually several guests I've had on here because he was in Green Bay for so long working. So that's kind of fun too. Mm-hmm. Let's do the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Now, and this is where I get to name drop because my cousin Lee Schwabe sent me this. This is my great-grandpa, Peter Schwabe.
Huh.
He was a judge. And it says, this is just part of the headline, I think, from the article. I didn't know this until like 10 years ago. Superior Court Judge Peter H. Hyacinth Schwabe denies bail to Al Capone's top hitman, Machine Gun Jack McGurn, suspected in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. That's from the books Chicago Assassins by Richard Smelter and Deadly Valentines by Jeffrey Gusfield. So I do have an article from that in the Chicago Daily News or something. I thought that was kind of a cool, like, well, I'm mostly Irish, but I have a Polish side too with Schwabe. Sure. So we are not mob members. I want to make that very clear on the air. But my grandpa was a judge who kind of stuck it to the mob a little bit years ago.
And they're still looking for you.
I had nothing to, Peter is a middle name for me. I'm going to throw my great grandfather under the bus because he's already deceased. But and Jack McGurn, as I understand, had a very Italian sounding name. That was just an alias as well.
Yes. So. The majority of the different mafia members changed their names because they were too ethnic and they wanted them to sound, believe it or not, more American.
Huh.
The other thing is that there was far more in many mafias than just the Italian.
Yeah.
And even to this day, back in the 30s and 40s, there were the Irish the mafia mobs, if you prefer.
Right.
And but there was also the Jewish mob in Chicago. They used to call them the Kosher Capones. And they were mostly on the west side. But what happened as the city developed, they would move further and further out. And eventually they lost their base.
Oh, wow.
So
Lefty Rosenthal, who he was a mob accountant, correct?
Yep.
And he is featured in the film. Robert De Niro played him in Casino.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Spilotro brothers. Oh, my God. This is all coming back to me. I was a freshman at DePaul, and a big limo pulls up. And the girls that got out of the car were Spilotros. They were Anthony Spilotro or it was Tony, and I can't remember his brother's name, but they had just found the Spilotro brothers in a cornfield in Indiana. And here are his daughters, maybe 3 weeks later, pulling up in a limo to DePaul University.
Hmm.
And everybody was like, literally murmur all through the cafeteria. Why, that's who that is, you know? And it was just crazy. But so you said before, Bob, off the air that the mob still exists. You just don't hear about it as much.
No.
And I thought, I was under the impression that the FBI and their wiretapping really did kind of, not necessarily crush them, but broke them off into several different pieces. There were no big, you know, criminal empires anymore. But you said that's not true.
Well, it worldwide and in America specifically, there are many, as you said, smaller cells throughout the country that still exist. I mean, they still exist in Chicago. They still exist in New York. When I lived and worked in Connecticut, you couldn't work with somebody who wasn't somehow connected with somebody else in the mob or the mafia.
Yeah.
And the places that I worked as well as the people that I worked with. And that was because almost all of the mobs and mafias have somebody who is legit, who is clean, who has nothing on them that you can do anything, no record of any kind. Jeez. However, they know everything about what's going on. So if something happens, that's the person you call. I'm not going to say the last name, but there was a gentleman out in Connecticut named Neil. And if something happened, you called Neil. And where I worked, there was a guy named Franco. Something happened, you called Franco. And they knew who to contact and what to do. So, and that exists to this day.
That's really interesting. So let's just talk about, before the break, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in Chicago. That was Capone's attack on the Irish, a payback for the shootout that hurt Johnny Torrio?
That and a friend of his who ran a restaurant had been kidnapped, and they were going to hold him for ransom, and they killed him, which really made, you know, I mean, Al Capone was not the most stable to begin with.
Right.
And so he made the arrangements to do the St. Valentine's Day massacre, but to keep himself from having any culpability, he went to his home in Florida with friends and made sure, hey, Al Capone's in Florida, Al Capone's in Florida, and then had the hit executed in Chicago.
Oh, that's unbelievable. That's right. So, I think that I find that fascinating that there was that rivalry between the two mobs, the Irish and the Italian mob. And Tony Accardo, who I want to talk about next too, and let's work our way up I-94 after this, but supposedly he was one of the shooters of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. I don't know if you believe that or not, but maybe we can pick
that up.
Well,
half of Chicago actually was involved in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
You know, it's such a corrupt city. when you realize the history of the city And people would say, oh, Mayor Daley, he did business with the mafia. You had to do business with the mafia. They were in everything.
Same thing in New York.
You couldn't avoid it. Yeah. So we'll talk about that, too, and the influence they had around the country, even with Hollywood, too. Bob Dennis is my guest. He's in the studio. This is fun. We're talking mob and mafia, and we have more of that coming up next after Civic Media's award-winning news team keeps you informed. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.